Birth, the Grand Division, Chapter 35. "How does that look?" asked Boris. "It looks perfect, man," said Kolibnikov. "These crates are nothing short of fine furniture," said Boris.
Looks like the shields are working," said Kolibnikov. "I am reading nothing over the background," he said, holding the digital detector.
"The ship set is already filed, and the transport will arrive in the morning. We load them in an hour, and they will fly to the coast to be loaded onto a container ship. In less than 5 days, they'll arrive in Jeddah. It will take at least 6 months for neutrons to begin showing up outside the shield," said Boris. Kolibnikov looked at Boris with a flat smile. "You've done well, Boris. We have 2 weeks to get them in place."
"That's enough time for the royals to have enjoyed the benefits of your technology," said Boris.
"The benefits will be impossible to hide."
"Their skin will look like a teenager's," he said.
"Right before it melts from their bones," said Boris with a chill to his voice.
"That's the spirit," said Kolibnikov.
Boris laid the drawings for the wooden crates on top of the workbench and grabbed his bicycle from the tool cage. It was a 10-minute ride to Oscar's house. The sun was low in the Almaty afternoon, but it was warm and lightly breezy for a September. The earthquakes were coming more frequently now, about 5 to 6 hours apart, but they were very mild. Still, it made everyone nervous and edgy that the big one would be next. People were kind and forgiving to one another. He could tell everyone was giving their best effort to raise their hearts to the vibrations spoken about by the American president. Most of the world leaders called him crazy and unqualified, but the vast majority of the people knew he was right, and they did their best to seek after the higher Earth as it began separating from the lower Earth. No one knew exactly what it would feel like, or even if they were doing it right, but they each knew how to do it wrong. The recent news broadcasts by Shelley LaSalle explained that the two Earths were upsetting one another, and that there would be vibrations that grew increasingly more severe. The equinox would occur soon. The vibrations would begin resonating with one another, creating rogue vibrations that could set off enormous quakes and trigger volcanoes. This stoked a sense of urgency to making this mission a success. There was a reason for the Nation of Islam to be destroyed. It was quickly becoming the purpose of his life. He slept lightly that night. He missed his Sasha. He missed his cat. There were few reasons he could find for remaining on this world, and he wanted to bring his considerable skill and experience to bear on the greatest threat the world faced today, the threat that took his wife away. The next morning came too soon, as he rolled his fatigue out of the bed and into his purple FedEx flyers. Oscar was already gone, but he could smell coffee and toast downstairs. He would have to think fast on his feet if he was going to arrive in Jeddah and be able to follow the crates to their destinations. He could trust no one to do anything. It was a region of the world that was vastly illiterate, and anything shiny or new would end up being sold for scrap to the highest bidder with a moment of inattention. The only force in the Middle East that could keep the panels secure was the royal family. They would protect these whirlpools as though they were the fountain of youth itself. The Arab sun is hard on the skin, and the opulence of wealth beyond what any human has ever seen can bring flaccidity to one's prowess as a male. It was difficult to find a female who was both beautiful and able to keep their mouth closed when induced into a forced concubine. He knew the nearly instant renewal of genital domination would be as addictive as heroin once the whirlpool bathing solution full of hormones and steroids infuses through the skin. It would draw the men who sponsor terror from their palaces on the coast to the final Hajj, at least on the world as we know it. Boris grabbed the toasted homemade bread as it came out of the small counter oven and spread butter over it while he topped off his coffee cup and dumped in a little cream to soften the bitterness. He knew it would be his last meal in this house. It might be his last meal in Kazakhstan. His mind drifted to the future he had most recently charted.
It was not the one he'd dreamed of when he became one of the youngest managers of the Energy Bureau. It was not the one he'd dreamed of when he captured his beautiful bride with his charm and strength. It was not the one he imagined when he woke up in the middle of the night sometimes to just look at her sleeping and to gently comb his fingers through her silky black hair. But it was the one that lay before him, and it was rolling out in front of him as though it was scripted long ago, staying just ahead of his imagination. The bread and coffee were still warm in his stomach as he rode past a well-manicured yard. He was surprised by the strong aroma of a night-blooming jasmine, and he stopped pedaling. The only sound was the wind against his ears, and he knew he would never forget that smell. His heart fell a little when he quickly realized he would never tell this story to anyone, ever. He coasted the bicycle up to the building, once teeming with people busy keeping up with the arms race and space races. He opened the door and rolled through the lobby. Marina was not at her receptionist desk, but one of the Jaguars was in the parking lot, which meant Kolibnikov was here. He could hear through the closed door of the factory a forklift beeping as it backed up. He opened the door and rolled his bicycle to the tool cage, and Kolibnikov met him as he turned around. "Good morning, comrade," he said, extending his right hand. Boris gripped it firmly and smiled slightly. It was good to see the dedication in this young engineer. In another day and time, he would have mentored such a man to be a great bureaucrat. "Good morning," he said, releasing the tattooed man's strong grip. "We are loading your furniture onto the Hercules cargo plane," said Kolibnikov. "American. Good thinking. That's a good endorsement," said Boris. "You will be flying to Jeddah tomorrow. Marina has your arrangements. She is on her way from the airport now. We had to apply some diplomacy to get you through the visa process quickly," said Kolibnikov. "You would have made a good bureaucrat, my friend," said Boris, patting him on his muscular shoulder. "Coffee?" asked Kolibnikov. "I had one before I left, but I could sip an espresso," he said. And the two men headed for the small break area beside the receptionist desk. When they turned down the hallway, they heard Marina's unmistakable voice before they saw her. "Good morning, gentlemen," she said. "It is a good morning," said Kolibnikov, kissing her on the cheek. "We are ahead of schedule. How did things go at the airport?" Boris could feel the heat in his chest as she aimed her deep blue eyes at him, caressing his soul with her slowly blinking eyelashes. He swallowed hard. "I have taken care of everything," she said in flawless Russian, as she held out the airline pouch containing the tickets. "Your passport is inside, with the visa stamped already." "Thank you, Marina," said Boris in his bureaucratic Russian tone. "You Russians, always playing games. Is everything chess with you?" asked Kolibnikov. Boris smiled and tried to look away from her face, but Marina did not move a muscle in her gaze. Her teeth were like white crystal, and they parted slightly, and her words were like pure energy as they crossed the room and washed over both of them. "The signs of all futures swing on the post we drive into the earth. The hammer must strike true." There was a pause as the two men seemed to focus on keeping their hearts pumping. "I am sure our dedication to the mission is strong enough," said Kolibnikov finally. "Let's make an espresso, Boris." Where he got his strength to survive around her was beyond Boris. Like a lion raised from a cub, she was too beautiful to behold with a controlled treachery. One day would come a feeling, while meeting eyes with that lion, that lunch was about to be served. Kolibnikov could walk forward and scratch that lion behind the ears. Boris took the airline packet from Marina while looking at Kolibnikov. He walked into the break room and began warming up the espresso machine and looking for a cup. Kolibnikov walked to the sink and washed his hands. "She is something, yes?" he asked. Boris opened the refrigerator and grabbed the skim milk. His thoughts were on the next few days. He looked at Kolibnikov and tilted his head while raising his eyebrows. "You don't have to say anything," said Kolibnikov. Within a few minutes, they were walking for the loading area with their espresso. The forklift had the last crate loaded, and the crew was strapping it to the ball mat floor of the aircraft before closing the rear doors. "Weight and balance is squared away. Here's a copy of our flight plan. I don't know how you did it, but according to the shipper, the port of entry will not inspect these crates. This wood will end up in somebody's living room as furniture, you know," said the co-pilot. "This technology is for the benefit of the richest men on Earth," said Boris. "Packaging is part of the sparkle," winked Kolibnikov to the co-pilot. "I'm cool with it. You want to sign here?" he said, holding out the clipboard for Kolibnikov to sign. "The Moore arrives in 2 days, so these will be containerized tomorrow afternoon. I will scan a copy of the SEAL report and email it to you at this address," he said, pointing to the email address provided on the shipper. "That will work. You guys are taking off shortly?" asked Kolibnikov. "Actually, we have to wait until midnight to fly. We're out of hours today. We flew 6 hours under orders not to fly a Part 95. Revenue both ways," said the co-pilot. "That was my doing," said Boris. "We demand premium service, so we pay a premium price," said Boris, using his old-school methodology. "We'll firewall it, sir," said the co-pilot. "Good man," said Boris, smiling as Kolibnikov returned the clipboard. "Okay, guys, there's a pilot's lounge on the second floor. It's a nice arrangement," said Kolibnikov. "We spared no expense in the old days," said Boris with a nostalgic tone. Boris and Kolibnikov turned to walk back into the office area. "Former military?" asked Boris. "Americans, actually. Very trusted," he said. "I'm beginning to think we should have flown them the whole way," said Boris. "Too risky. There are terrorists out there, you know," said Kolibnikov, smiling. "A Hercules would make a tasty target for someone with a rash for Americans." "I will ride in the truck from Jeddah to Mecca and on to Medina," said Boris. "You better get some sleep yourself, my friend," said Kolibnikov. "Your flight leaves when? 6 a.m?" "Yes. Besides, I need to settle up with Oscar," said Boris. "Of course. Good luck. Text me if you need anything," he said. Many weeks of hard work and careful planning had put all the pieces in controlled play. His requisitions were never questioned or delayed. The craftsmen who built the crates securing the whirlpools were impeccable and asked no questions. There was not a wasted hour in the whole operation, which was quite unlike the Soviet bureaucracy he remembered. There was always grease for one corrupt official or another. He used to call it the Little Red Corvette. How else could a man making the salary of a bus driver afford a fishing house on the lake or a German sedan? There was none of that with this team. It was clear they got their directions and assistance from a higher power, but Kolibnikov's decisions were neither wasteful nor opulent. After the Cold War, there was a colder war between NATO and Russia, and no one could blame a man for planning for the future. Now, the future had a new meaning for people. They each dreamed of going with the higher Earth when the separation became imminent, but suspected in their unrepentant hearts that they would be left with their friends here on this cursed world. Crime had evolved into a waiting game, as it was assumed that the stuff of the old material world would have no meaning in the new one, and thus would not qualify for the higher Earth. Millions of people sat like vultures, knowing they would survive the cataclysms, whatever they might be, waiting for the current owners to disappear from their thrones and castles. He chuckled to himself as he pushed his bicycle out the door into the front parking lot. "For the love of money is the root of all evil," he said to the bicycle before throwing his leg over the seat and pushing down on the pedal. He felt as though he had fastened an astronaut's helmet around his collar. He could breathe. He was being fed everything he needed to survive the atmosphere of Earth, and yet felt as though he was groping for the abort button. Each thrust of the bicycle forward seemed to deliver him deeper into the abyss surrounding his heart. The wind around his face failed to convince him he was alive. Part of him was tapping on the inside of the glass of the aquarium, trying to get the attention of the person outside that he needed to be scooped out with the net, or surely he would drown. The tires of the bicycle rolled over cracks in the road, and his body jolted with the reality of the road beneath him, and yet the handlebars could not steer him to his destination. "I am a sovereign being, and I am alive," he told himself as he was slipping through Almaty's afternoon breeze. Within a few minutes he rolled up Oscar's driveway and passed his car, but he still felt the helmet around his neck. He opened the front door and walked inside. "Hello, I'm home," he said, listening to his own words echo back untrue off the walls of the humble farmhouse living room. "We're in the kitchen," came Oscar's voice. Boris walked through the house to the kitchen, hoping they would not see he was trapped inside his own body, pounding on the screen from the inside for release from his equipment. "I am home early, as I must fly out tomorrow. I wanted to say goodbye before I missed you in the morning," he said. "Of course," said Oscar. "Please, sit down with us and have a cake and a coffee my wife has made for us. I am delighted to have the cake, but could I have a glass of milk instead? I really don't want to turn away from a good night's sleep," he said. Oscar's wife opened the refrigerator and poured a glass of milk for Boris. "The American news lady said the planet is getting close to having its baby," she said. "She means that anything could happen now. Are you sure you want to travel? I mean, couldn't it wait a few days until we're sure about things?" asked Oscar. "I'm afraid not. In fact, this trip may be critical to that very thing. I must go in the morning," said Boris. "I was going to ask if you would be returning, but I guess we're not sure about anything these days, are we?" asked Oscar. "Nothing, except who we love," said Boris after sipping some of the cold milk from the glass. "I know this is important for you. You have always been a man on a mission," said Oscar. "What does that mean?" asked Boris. "You have worked for me for 10 years, and you have been perfect, always on time, never miss a day, never miss a delivery, no complaints, a mission of perfect closure on every day. That's what I meant," said Oscar. "Well, I guess that makes me a missionary," said Boris with a short smile on his face. He held up his finger and walked out of the kitchen and up the stairs to his room. He quickly spun the numbers on his safe and opened the door. He retrieved the dollars and the rubles, closed the door, and shuffled down the stairs. He placed the 2 stacks of cash onto the kitchen table in front of Oscar and picked up his glass of milk to take another gulp. "What's this?" asked Oscar. "It may not be worth anything in a few weeks. Someone needs to spend it. It would make me happy if it was you. Buy a car. Pay your house off," he said. "You sound like you're not coming back," said Oscar. "It's not that kind of closure. The future is always in motion, you know," said Boris. "Sasha would want you to have it. I know one thing, Boris. There will always be a future," said Oscar, looking at his wife, who smiled and reached out to hold his hand across the kitchen table. "Then let's make it a good one for everyone. I leave at midnight. Can you give me a ride to the airport?" he asked. "You bet. No problem," said Oscar. "I'm going upstairs to pack and get some rest. I won't get much over the next week or so," said Boris, washing the last of the round coffee cake down his throat with the remainder of the milk in the glass. "Goodbye, Boris," said Oscar's wife. "It has been such a pleasure to have you here with us. I have never expressed gratitude truthfully in my life until now," said Boris, sliding the stacks of cash over the table to her. "Please accept it." She smiled as a tear fell down her cheek. "Bless you,
Boris Domashev, she said, trying not to cry. I have never been blessed before, either, said Boris, bowing slightly and heading back up the stairs. Get some sleep, Boris. See you around midnight, said Oscar, as Boris could be heard stepping up the stairs.